Now let's leave all the rancor of that first hour behind us and we'll take a deep breath and we will sit back and talk to Dr. Maureen Gaffney. Hi, Maureen. And so the last time you were in, when you were talking about your book, Your One Wild and Precious Life, I suppose we talked about the first half of life and the kind of things that form you and everything. So today we're kind of at midlife, standing at the top of the hill, so to speak. And now, now we're looking down to the finish line in a way, and a different perspective creeping in now.
Yes, I think there's a very big change at midlife, and that is in the way we think about time. When you're a kid, you think about time, as it were, since your birth. That's why children, if you say, you know, he's six, they say, no, I'm six and a half. And there's a sort of a forward momentum, you know, that each step you're taking away from your being junior and young is sort of getting you to where you think this is all the exciting things happen.
Yeah.
But at midlife, there's a flip and you start thinking of time left. Now, it's not actually a depressing thought. It's more that realization that you're at the midpoint and that you have completed the first agenda of life, if you like. And there are you're well through it, at least.
Okay, so tell us what the first agenda
was.
That's
the sort of goals that are a mix that you had that sort of have driven your life up to now, that are partly your family's expectations, you know, your family have certain ideas, had certain ideas about how your life should go. And also you formed your own ideas. And I think in adolescence, I know certainly in my own case, you just get this idea into your head about what it is you want to do that may be poles apart from what your family think you're going to do. And it's a sort of a mysterious thing, you know. It's it comes, I think, from somewhere very deep in yourself that you know that there's, as it were, a destiny for you, to put a grand term on it.
Yeah, if you're lucky, I think.
If you are. You know, if adolescence is a time when you've had a lot of time to think about yourself and so on. But even sometimes when people's lives aren't great, they still, I think there is such an energy surge in adolescence that you're able to form that idea of yourself that I can escape this, I can make something different for myself. So I think that carries you through, working through that agenda.
Okay.
All the way through your 20s, you know, when you get the job you want or you stay in education. And then in your 30s, you're sort of putting the structures of your life together. So we spend an awful lot of our energy, you know, in family, you know, settling down, as your mother might have called it, and, you know, your job, getting a foothold in the world of work and developing an interest, you know, like sport or something, or art. And that agenda is sort of, you're well through that agenda, successfully or unsuccessfully by midlife.
So then we're at a point of, it sounds like a kind of a point of great freedom then, does it?
You've done that.
And if you're still lucky to be healthy and alive and have years ahead of you. So we get into what is a second agenda then?
Into the second agenda of life. And that is very much that combination that comes from knowing yourself very well. By midlife, you've clocked up a lot of hours. You've a lot of experience of life. And when you ask people who are middle-aged how they feel about it, most people feel they're in their prime at middle age. They feel that they know themselves better. Their expectations of themselves are much more in tune with the person that they really are, rather than, as it were, from elsewhere. They've much more self-acceptance. They can
see. So we're happier at this point than we have been, are we?
I mean, most people feel that they are very happy. About 70% of people who are middle-aged think this is a good time. It doesn't mean you're happy every day, but it means that you feel you're in the right place and that you're doing okay. But at any one point, at any stage, there's about 30% of people who are struggling with one or more areas of their lives. Now, for people in that category, as it were, some of them are only in it for a very short time. You know, they're going through a rough period or a relationship is broken up or a job turns out not to be what you want or you have a horrible boss or something like that. They move out of that category, but other people move in. But there are some people in that category who've always struggled. Mm. You know, they have certain vulnerabilities. You know, they've had a rough start in life that they haven't kind of healed it enough to give them the momentum to go forward.
So the second agenda then, so like I think a lot of people probably don't plan much what they want out of the first half of life, you know, in a way, because you're subject to, it's more about survival and getting ahead and all that.
That's right. So
do we have an opportunity then maybe in an ideal world to say, okay, what do I want? What's important to me in this time that's left?
An awful lot of people do that. I suppose the two big questions of midlife are, one is this it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, have I put all my effort into this and is this the sum total of what I want to do? And it's interesting that that a lot of those thoughts and ideas and dreams you had in adolescence come back into your mind, you know, in sort of funny forms. But you suddenly remember things that you thought you were going to do. So you're kind of reassessing where you are.
Okay. Is this a midlife crisis we're talking
about?
No, there's no, that
was a very fashionable thing in the 1970s to have a midlife crisis. Yeah. And the evidence really is that most people don't have a midlife crisis. But there is about one in four people who go through a rough time at least a tumultuous time emotionally at midlife for the kind of reasons I just talked about. But for the rest, you may go through, when you are assessing your life and trying to figure out what you want to do with the rest of it, there is a period of emotional churn. There is interesting research about what's called the big dip, as sometime in your 40s, you sort of go through, now it's a very time limited period, but you go through a period, and this is universal across cultures, no matter what the state of the country. So it sort of seems to be something in ourselves. And your sleep might get poor. You find yourself just feeling low, and all the ordinary challenges of life suddenly seem to be taking a big toll on you. Like you feel kind of exhausted from the whole thing.
Yeah.
And there is at midlife that feeling of what's called crossover stress, because you at that point, most people have a family, most people have jobs. But also your own parents are getting older. And so you feel sort of that you have responsibilities on both. So you are kind of, I think, pressured. And that period, it's sort of, most people get through it.
Okay.
Apart from people like who have these more long-term issues that they need to address. And then you get into the great smooth plains of middle age.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? Yeah. I'm keen to get back now to this point we're at. So I'm asking for a friend, I swear, right? But we get back to this point, we're at in the middle and we want to decide how do I want to best use what's left and what's important and what are my priorities? What should we be doing there? What should we be thinking?
Well, I think a very interesting way of looking at is to look at what you might call the unlived parts of yourself. In other words, when you made decisions, you know, about your job or just evolved that way, or you married the person you did, or you have a lifestyle the way that you've constructed.
You gave up things all the time to make those decisions.
Yes, you do. Yeah. You have to leave other stuff behind. And that sort of unlived bit of yourself sort of start surfacing. Okay. Sometimes in dreams, sometimes you find yourself remembering stuff and you think, why is that coming into my mind? And it's a very healthy process. You know, it's that sense of, there's something in you, a little voice in you saying, listen, you know, listen to this. And that is, once you can get hold of that, I think tremendous things open up for you. You suddenly find a bit of yourself that you left behind, sometimes voluntarily. And I did it in my own life that, you know, I went to college to do English. You know, I loved English in school and I wanted to be, as I grandly call myself at 18, an author. And then I did English the first year and then I switched to psychology because I thought psychology was fascinating and I've never, ever regretted it. But it's interesting that, you know, at a certain point in my life, that began to surface again. Because I know that any course I ever did, you know, kind of self-development course, and they ask you what you really want to do, always top of my list was I'd love to write a book, you know. But of course, it didn't happen, you know. And then I thought, like, it's now or never, you know. I do it or I do it now. And you know, that's what I did.
And you have a phrase in there, which is, I think, create or stagnate.
Yeah.
That's really,
that's
like,
the big,
either
I think that's
growing
the big,
still at that point or...
Yeah, you're growing from the day you're born, the minute you're born, to the literally the minute you die.
But there can be a danger in the second half of life that we become kind of...
Yes, that's the sort of task of midlife. Right. Is that, and what I mean by create is that you want to make your life count for something. You want to leave a footprint. You want to feel at the end of your life, my life was successful in my own terms. And
to do something maybe bigger than yourself or that's for more than yourself.
I mean, it can be, I think it varies an awful lot. For some people, it's sort of something beyond yourself. So that for some people, it's their family, you know, that they will know at the end of their lives that they have done their absolute best for their family. For some people, it's a project, you know, they want to create something, to do something, to leave that mark behind them. And for some, it's community, you know, there. But I think you suddenly see yourself in a very relative way. You see yourself as not just your own little egocentric life, but you think you're part of a much bigger community.
But you're veering close to saying something, to using the word spiritual, maybe.
And I don't shy away from the word, because the research, when I was doing the book, I was looking up the particular things that build resilience in middle age. And there are the usual things like staying fit and all of that. But having a broadly spiritual view of life turned out to be the most powerfully predictive of having good resilience.
And that's as much as, that could be just seeing yourself as part of something bigger be spiritual, isn't it? You don't have to believe in
no,
in
for
the
some people,
beard
it's, you know, it's an adherence to a particular kind of faith. But for an awful lot of people now, particularly younger people who are not particularly affiliated to any religion, it's much more that there is something that you can contribute, something unique that you were put into the world to do, and that's what you have to do.
Okay.
And I think when people do that, they get hold of such energy in themselves. And sometimes they figure it out themselves. Sometimes they have conversations with people that they trust, you know, and someone else can see something in you that you can't detect yourself. And once they name it, you think, that's it.
Okay.
You know?
So we have to, I know you'd say people kind of do it naturally, but I suppose awareness helps anything.
It does.
It'd be good to be aware of this and maybe do it more consciously than we might tend to do it. Talk to people about it.
You'd love to think that there's kind of drop-in centres that people might have, you know, where they can sit down and talk to somebody for maybe an hour. Now, an hour isn't going to be enough, but it's enough to get you thinking, because there is something, I think, about someone replaying back to you what you've just said, or even when you have someone who actually listens to you, you find yourself saying, well, now that I think about it, maybe that's what I need to do.
What was the question you told us the last time that you could elicit the truth out of somebody? Is there something else on that?
To say, do you have any, that's interesting, but is there anything else that you'd like to say about that, or you have to say about that? And that's when someone looks up one side and then you get all the fresh thinking, because a lot of the stuff that you tell someone when you meet them, you know, is stuff that's been churning around. You know, a lot of it is just junk thinking that's been, you know, going round and round and round and round in your mind. Whereas when someone says, now that I think about it, what you're getting is fresh thinking.
Okay, so if you're trying to support someone in this, that's a good technique probably if they do come and talk to you about it.
Yes.
Now, as I would have predicted, I'd say there are husbands and wives all over the country going, why is Maureen Gaffney putting these mad notions into people's heads? There's a texter here saying, Maureen, how can you tell the difference between a midlife crisis and taking on a new challenge in midlife?
I think a midlife crisis is, to the extent that there's only, again, one in four people, and it's usually time limited. And it's usually a good thing in the sense that you're there thinking, look, my life hasn't turned out the way I want it. Now, is there anything I can do about it? So it's ultimately, I think, that period of reflection is great, and it gives you the energy. And you just discover stuff in yourself. There's always something new to be learned about yourself.
Okay,
and there's
listen.
Always something new to be learned about someone else. And I find that the most liberating idea in the world. You think you know someone very well. There's always a little bit of them you don't know. And I think the very best thing for any partner to do for the other partner is to be aware of that, alive to that, that even when you think you know every single pattern that they have, which is part, I suppose, the toll of domesticity, you know, you think there he goes again, you know, then I think that if you just let someone, as it were, open up, it'll reveal something to themselves and to you that is quite new. And that gives people huge energy.
And you recommend on the domesticity thing, and I think, isn't it what they call in AA doing a geographical, which isn't always a good idea, because wherever you go, there you are. But you do recommend actually making the effort to get out of the domestic situation, and even like to travel a bit more, which I think is something, I know it's not very spiritual, but it is something I think I'd like to do with the second half of my life. But that these
absolutely.
Are all,
because you know, the old, I've never figured out where I read it, but out of my country and myself I go, you know, and in case Bord Fáilte are going to get insulted, of course you can go out of your country in your own
country.
So it's that sense of discovery. And that is actually one of the key things that keeps your well-being up throughout life, that you are open to the new, that you are open to new ideas, new people, new situations, that you don't get locked in to this sense of been there, done that, which is a big danger in middle age. You all remember, you know, one of your parents saying to you like, I tried that and it didn't work then, it won't work now. So it's that openness, I think, that really is the absolute keystone to resilience and happiness in midlife.
Yeah. So on a very simple level, though, get out of your comfort zone a bit, even physically, like go somewhere. And I think the textures of a different place. Yeah. They do seem to rewire your brain. You find yourself thinking different things and opening your mind up and everything. I know
you do,
because
the routine
sort of
deadens us.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know we have to have it in our lives, but it does deaden us. And I think the big danger that at every stage of life is stagnation, feeling blocked, feeling that you can't move on, feeling that there's nothing new. But it's particular, that is the spectre of middle age, that you are stagnating. And that's why I think every opportunity people should give themselves, and other people should give them every opportunity to try something else.
Yeah, there's a great question here, and I think I know what your answer is going to be. If Etna in Wexford says, she probably won't be happy when we read out her name, because will you ask Maureen, is it normal in midlife to decide that there are things that you don't want to do anymore? That sounds very healthy for
to me. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the broad strategies of midlife, you know, that sometimes it's enough just to tweak things here and there, you know, spend more time with your partner or spend more time by yourself, you know, looking after, you know, giving yourself a bit of freedom and space. But the what's always lurking or even to exit is a good strategy. If you exit either the job that you hate or is crushing you,
okay,
or a relationship that simply is crushing you. But to do it in a planned way, you know, to think about it. They're good strategies for midlife. The bad strategies are breakouts, you know, where...
Okay, what's that?
A breakout, the usual form at midlife is having an affair.
Okay.
You know, it's... Or just leaving your job with absolutely no plans about where you're going to earn a living.
Okay.
Or going off on a sort of a middle-age gap year.
Messy stuff, you're saying.
No messy stuff,
Listen, an interesting point you make is that it's a great time, particularly for women, you say.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is. It's very good for men as well, but women have it's a brilliant time for women, put it that way. The biggest...
There was a little gamey smile there when you said that. Go on, tell me.
But the thing that women most treasure about being middle-aged is that they have a sense of confident power, that they have a sense that they've had to make so many compromises in their lives, you know, especially to, you know, rear kids and all of that. And they don't regret that by and large.
Mm.
But it's or to please other people, to kind of, you know, sort of get a relate, because women do most of the relationship work, as it were, on personal relationships. You know, they're the ones invariably have to say, we have to talk about this, you know, and men invariably reply, like, talk about what, you know, which is the wrong answer, you know, because you have to talk about what is going on between you, mm-hmm, or what isn't going on between you. But I think they've an awful lot of that done. And by the time they've gone through the slog of that, then when they reach midlife, they think, like, this is me time.
Yeah.
You know, and they feel much freer. It doesn't mean that they're not looking after their responsibilities. It's more that they feel they have this surplus energy now and that they want to invest it in themselves. I mean, you only have to go to any restaurant and see a group of women out together. I mean, you can't hear what's going on. There's so much laughing going on and screeching and, like, and they're obviously talking in a very intimate way about what's going on in their lives. There's a tremendous sense of exuberance about what's going on.
And you see, we touched on this the last day, and I feel you're kind of reluctant to say it as a blanket thing. But the fact is, would you not agree, women are much better at the second half than men are, and women are much better at friendships in the second half and at keeping all that up and keeping up their involvement in things and everything. And maybe is it that men need to learn a bit of that from women?
Well, I think men need to give themselves permission as well to do it. You know, I think the problem, I think, for men often is that they get in harness. You know, they kind of feel that they have to sort of, you know, do the job, like,
and
you know.
And then they start taking themselves very seriously
and
as well.
They start to, and then you get, you know, pomposity on one side and you get sort of that kind of worn out bit on the other, you know. I think men have to give themselves permission as well, you know. But very often they need a big nudge from the women in their lives to do it, you know. They'll do it grumbling, you know, but they generally, once they do it, I mean, I know when I used to work as a clinical psychologist, it was invariably women who made the first contact, you know, if a couple was having trouble. And sometimes men, you know, would be very reluctant. But once they felt that they weren't going to be, you know, put in the naughty chair, you know, and that someone was going to actually listen to where they were coming from, etc., they actually became incredibly enthusiastic about it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because for them...
I'm sure it must have been a relief for them after
also,
all those years.
But also, yeah, because I don't think men tend to open up about themselves in the same way. I mean, girls, even when they're very young, you see these two little girls, you know, in a playground or there, and you can tell that they're, you know, they're sharing all kinds of intimacies. Where yeah. the boys, like, are... God help them, like jostling for position, you know, and making sure they're not in the one down position and all of
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So I think men need women more. And we know certainly that the older they get, the more they need women. It's women who take care of men's health. They're the ones who nag you until you give up the ghost and go and have your, you know, your screening or go to the GP and get something checked out. And they kind of spruce you up, I think, psychologically,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, thank God for the women. Thank God for the women. It's so true, isn't it? But anyway, listen. So what we might do the next day then is talk about late adulthood into old age. And the old age stuff is very interesting, not just for people who are in old age, but actually I found it very interesting as a way to know what the needs of people, you know, who might be older are to understand.
Absolutely.
Better.
And the middle age should listen to it, because an awful lot of stuff that will determine how happy you are in your grand old age has to happen in when you're middle-aged.
Okay, so hopefully we'll come back to that soon. And the book is Your One Wild and Precious Life, an inspiring guide to becoming your best self at any age. It's published by Penguin and it's available now. Maureen Gaffney, thank you as always.
Thanks,
we'll
thanks
take a break.
Thanks very much, Brendan.
Thanks.
Email brendan@rte.ie.